The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back as we head into hour two. If you missed my monologue in the first hour, I was talking about the social condition of America based on a poll in the Wall Street Journal today, which should have received a lot more news and attention. Of course, it'll be crowded out somewhat by the story, the very sad and tragic story out of Nashville, Tennessee. We were talking a little bit about that earlier in the show as well. I want to pick up on this, but here's awfulness. Here's awfulness from the mainstream media vis-a-vis the Nashville situation. For those that may not know, the police and authorities have identified the alleged shooter, who herself has been killed. And the alleged shooter, 28-year-old transgender person, which is going to create a whole series of cross currents on this story to be wary of and careful with. But here's something awful from Terry Moran at ABC News. Let me see if I can play this for you.
Hale said she's a former student of the school and confirmed that Audrey Hale identified herself as a transgender person. State of Tennessee earlier this month passed and the governor signed a bill that banned transgender medical care for minors.
There you go. Okay, so the governor of Tennessee signs a transgender law, and now we have, as a result, a transgender person shooting up a school and adults and children as a result. This is journalistic malpractice, and it's actually humanity 101 failure. First of all, the shooter was 28. The law affected those under the age of 18. Second of all, Tennessee is hardly the first state to have done such a thing. Florida, Mississippi, Georgia, Arkansas, Texas, Utah, even Arizona and South Dakota. Did I say Iowa? Other states are working on these very kinds of laws, and it's not going to be a good effort or a good way to debate and discuss them soberly if we're going to engage in social and political blackmail over these things, either prospectively or retroactively. There's also an element of odd bigotry here, probably unintended, but the notion that where a law is passed, a certain member of a population can't handle it and is thus forced into a violent action is the height of bigotry. The height of bigotry is to assume that we cannot comport ourselves as law-abiding citizens and human beings in a democratic society when a law is passed using democratic processes. There is no justification for that kind of violence. We won't know everything about this story, obviously, that we want to, because it's already been politicized, not only by the likes of ABC. Joe Biden's first statements were the need to ban assault weapons, as was doubled down on by Karine Jean-Pierre. I understand it. Two of the three weapons used by the assailant were already illegal when, or obtained illegally, proving the efficacy of just those sorts of nostrums. The other problem we have here is how much or how little attention will be brought to bear on this incident, on this tragedy, because the alleged assailant wasn't perhaps the right kind or didn't fit the right kind of narrative of the kind of assailant the media likes to make a big deal out of when it fits their narrative. As listener Dan put it earlier, if the shooting this morning was a male former graduate of that Christian school who shot up a transgender gathering place, the media would be all over it, assigning hatred to all Christians Republicans or Southerners. Of course, that's absolutely right and equally disgusting if we treat victims and assailants differently in this country. All victims are victims, and all criminals are criminals and should be treated equally, not only by the law, but by the discussion and analysis of it all. Equal justice under law, but equal justice regardless. We all bleed with the same blood from the same prick. We all laugh from the same tickle. We all die from the same kind of end of life we ultimately force. And I think, frankly, honestly, ABC ought to take a beat. They ought to think about what they're doing. So should all the mainstream media, and so should everyone. So should everyone. The story already started off this morning with bad facts, and we probably still don't have all the facts. We had a listener earlier today talking about the obvious mental issues that go into these kinds of horrific events, and they are the least discussed. If they're brought up, they're brought up for about an hour and then dismissed, because it's so much sexier going after the Second Amendment than it is going after our first senses and discussing the needs there. I don't know if we'll ever get a talk screen on this case. I will tell you that if you look at some of the most memorable, sad word to use, but the most identifiably memorable mass shootings, you will find drug use is involved with the assailant in almost every case. Is that going to be part of the discussion, or is that not going to be part of the discussion? Are the mental deficits we have imposed on our young adults, and really all adults, as well as young people, over the past several years, is that going to be a discussion point, or is that not going to be a discussion point? Are we going to talk about family upbringing and formation? Are we going to talk about what was broadcast before this last deadly attack or not? Usually we have signs, as we did in famously Uvalde, as we did famously with Marjorie Stoneman, as we did famously in Tucson. We have signs that this is a person who is not only a danger to themselves, but a danger to others. Are we going to have that conversation? Will we find that out about this assailant? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have high hopes for it. We haven't had high success with any of those discussions just yet. But I did, based on an earlier call today, want to say something about this whole issue of discussion with suicide and mental illness and the transgender movement. There's very few people who talk about this with much responsibility, as far as I can tell. Mental illness is a complicated issue. So, too, is the notion of suicidal ideation. And it has been politicized, and we have taken a blunderbuss to all of those things when what we require is a lot more quiet and sobriety. Leo Sapir, at the City Journal at the Manhattan Institute, I think is one of the few people who has looked at this with maturity. And I want to share with you something he wrote about this, inviting these when we invite the discussions about and invoke the discussions about these suicide tropes. They should be handled a lot more delicately with a lot more pregnancy. The mental health condition of any individual is its own complicated factor. Now try and graft this issue of this major, major, awful, awful, ultimate issue of suicide onto a political or socio-political or cultural socio-political issue, and you're going to fail. You're going to fail again and again, and you're going to create more problems. As Leo Sapir put it, invoking the suicide trope, individual activists, organizations like the ACLU, and politicians are all violating well-recognized, research-based guidelines on how to talk responsibly about suicide. That they do so with such consistency and despite evidence of the danger suggests two possibilities. They are either ignorant about suicide and its prevention, or they are invested in the suicide narrative and its political advantages more than in reducing the likelihood of suicide in vulnerable youth. I want to give you more of what he has to say and not let it be interrupted by the commercial break, which I'm facing because I think it's important. You may not get this on a lot of radio shows. You may not get this in a lot of different places. But for those of us that take all of these things, whether it be politics or whether it be mental health, seriously, I think we need to take this a little bit more seriously than the activists have. We'll try and do so when we come right back. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'll give you some breaking news on a local issue, hopefully with some national implications, in the next segment. Many of you may recall we interviewed Professor Ilan Werman, a law professor at ASU, last week on his and some of our friends like Mike Bailey and Steve Tully's lawsuit against the city of Phoenix to abate the homeless, chronic homeless issue in the in what's known as the zone here in the city of Phoenix. And they have, thank goodness, prevailed. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. I want to finish this other very, these other very pregnant issues with as much decorum as I can. Lior Sapir writes that, Dr. Sapir writes, decades of research suggests that suicide is a socially contagious behavior, especially in youth. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention published a document titled Suicide Contagion and the Reporting of Suicide, Recommendations from a National Workshop. In a section titled Aspects of News Coverage That Can Promote the Contagion, the CDC cautioned against presenting simplistic explanations for suicide. Suicide, it explained, quote, is never the result of a single factor or event, but rather results from a complex interaction of many factors and usually involves a history of psychosocial problems. I am guessing Terry Moran and ABC read none of that or cared none about that. Dr. Sapir continues, transgender advocacy groups acknowledged the dangers of speaking irresponsibly about suicide and agreed with the CDC guidelines. That is, until some states started pushing back against medical associations and the Biden administration on the issue of pediatric gender medicine. In 2017, the Movement Advancement Project, which is an LGBT advocacy group, the Johnson Family Foundation, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, co-authored a document talking about suicide in the LGBT populations. The advocacy groups officially, all the other advocacy groups officially endorsed it, from the Human Rights Campaign to the Center for American Progress, and you can imagine the rest. The document contains this recommendation: don't attribute a suicide death to a single factor, such as bullying or discrimination, or say that a specific anti-LGBT law or policy will cause suicide. Suicide deaths are almost always the result of multiple overlapping causes, including mental health issues that might not have been recognized or treated. This recommendation couldn't be clearer. Insisting, as the ACLU, CNN, ABC, and countless journalists and activists and Democrats have, that a law restricting access to drugs and surgeries, particularly for minors, will cause kids to kill themselves, is a perfect kind of example of the kind of messaging that all these groups consider to be dangerous, I among them. It's way too complicating a factor to tie politics into it, and it is, I believe, on ABC's behalf, in the instance of the audio I played you, not only irresponsible, but frankly bigoted. The idea that a certain part of the population, a subpopulation of our fellow citizens, can't handle a democratically passed and authorized law without engaging in violence, anarchy, mass murder, or suicide by cop is a bigoted proposition. It is to say that you cannot handle your civic responsibilities like the rest of us. Isn't that what the communication is? Isn't that what the communication is? It was much like we saw during the Charlie Hebdo cartoons and the Dutch cartoons that the newspapers in America refused to publish, though they were causing all kinds of violence and beheadings and assassinations in Europe. We couldn't publish them because we thought the Muslim community here couldn't handle them without engaging in violence. We have far bigger problems than that if a cartoon is going to lead someone to violence, or the person engaging in the violence has a far bigger problem than the First Amendment if a cartoon is going to lead one to that. I don't know. I just don't know how this story will be covered in the days that follow. My guess is there will be an investment and an interest in burying much of this, if not almost all of it, because of the narratives not fitting the outcome narrative that the left and the Democrats usually try to exploit in these situations. But that's the word I want to use, exploit. No one should be exploited in these awful situations. There are people not alive today who were alive this morning, and that includes children, and that includes adults. And the way we over-politicize these things, to the degree we politicize them at all, is a commentary on those that do so. Shame on them. Shame on all, on the whole lot of them. Let's go back to the poll I was looking at earlier in the first hour in the cause of my monologue, the topic of my monologue. Why don't we start working a little bit more on ourselves? Why don't we start working on the serious problems we have in this country, which is the down market view, the down market commodity view of our patriotism and our love of country and our religious faith, and this notion of the preciousness of children, which we also see has taken a huge decline in this Wall Street Journal American Attitudes survey. Let's be the kind of society that not only we used to be, but the kind of society we claim we want. You can't keep going at this rate by removing organ after organ after organ and expecting the function after the function after the function. You just can't keep doing it. As Tony in the first hour called and said, you know, this is either going to end one way or the other. That's exactly right. Lincoln spoke about a house divided against itself cannot stand. It will become all one thing or all the other. Well, the one thing we're becoming isn't a very good thing. It's not a very pretty thing. It's not a very esteemable thing. The question is, are we going to be able to rescue it? It might help, by the way. It might help with a movement, a conservative movement that claims to care about these things, to start growing up a little bit and stop with the petty bickering amongst an internal to itself. Might help if we could kind of get on the big, on the right page and on the same page for the bigger picture here about what it is we're trying to save here, which are not personalities, by the way, but principles. Principles and a country. Thank you. Do it again.
Let's grow up, conservatives.
He said that because he said the alternative, if we don't grow up, was the election for the blueprint of socialism. Those were Barry Goldwater's words in 1960. Blueprint for socialism. Blueprint is a draft. It's a design. It's a potential. We aren't at the blue point anymore. We're not at the blueprint anymore. We're not at the draft. We're not at the potential of socialism. We're at the kinetic energy of it now. It's here. It's here. And we can either get together as a movement and do something about it, or we can continue to bicker along petty personality lines. I know which one I'm for. We'll be right back. With so many cracks showing up in the banking system and over $30 trillion in U.S. debt, the notion that we can just print more money falls on deaf ears, doesn't it? Venezuela, Argentina, Zimbabwe, they've all done that, and then came the defaults. But gold has never defaulted. Veteran-owned Midas Gold Group will reinforce your portfolio. Give them a call to look into safeguarding your money with the stability of gold, with the only precious metals dealer I and Seb Gorka and thousands of you trust. That's the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group. Gold traditionally holds its value when economies fail. Whether Silicon Valley, Signature, Credit Suisse, Midas Gold Group believes we are in the early stages of a growing crisis, and the Fed's higher interest rates are your cue to create your own bank with real money, gold. Check them out at MidasGoldGroup.com. MidasGoldGroup.com, or better yet, give them a call at 480-360-3000, 480-360-3000. Midas Gold Group, gold you can hold, your vault of confidence. I mentioned earlier some breaking news, good news for a change, thank gosh. We interviewed Professor of Law at ASU, Ilan Werman, last week. He was representing, along with friends Mike Bailey and Steve Tully and some others, property owners in what is known as the zone, colloquially or perhaps euphemistically known as the zone in Phoenix, where we have this awful situation of terrible chronic homelessness, just not really much more than a stone's throw from here. People living in squalor, crime being committed with reckless abandon, and the city not doing anything about it. So Tully and Bailey and Werman and a few others decided to sue the city, and the court has held in the plaintiff's favor. Again, thank goodness. The court found that the city of Phoenix stopped enforcing certain laws in the zone. It found that there has been an increase in violent crime that pertained at the same time to the cessation of enforcing laws in the zone. It found increased public drug use. It found that the zone has become a biohazard. It found that there were property crimes and prostitution, public indecency, increased unabated fire hazards, blocking of the right of way. It found all these things, and it found that the city has a duty to mitigate these efforts or to mitigate this nonfeasance of theirs, to actually do something about it. And so the court has issued a decision that there will be a strong likelihood of succeeding on the merits of a declaratory judgment that the city has been maintaining a public nuisance in the zone and that must stop. Thank God and thank goodness. This is the beginning of the end. It's not the end of the beginning. It's not the beginning of the beginning. It's, I believe, the beginning of the end. The decision says the court finds that the city has abused its discretion through the arbitrary application of law and provision of taxpayer-funded security in the zone, and that the irreparable injury is not remediable by damages if relief is withheld. That means the city has to act. A public nuisance will be declared, and the city will now be forced to act. Again, thank God. The plaintiffs, who our friends have been representing, established that they are entitled to injunctive and what is known as mandamus relief. Mandamus relief is a fancy word for ordering an entity to act. Often injunctive relief is thought of something where you're asking someone not to keep doing something, and that's a part of this too. Mandamus is asking the court to enforce an entity, in this case, the city of Phoenix, to act. The city of Phoenix is prohibited from continuing to maintain this public nuisance, the court says, and that the city of Phoenix shall abate the nuisance it presently maintains in the zone. Again, great work. I was talking to a friend the other day about the awful political leadership we have in this state and at our municipal levels of government as well. And we were saying, well, we may just have to litigate our way out of these things. Yep, we may just have to. And here's a good first step. Well done, Werman et al. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. How's this administration handling the economy, folks? Banks failing, stock market volatility, possible recession on the horizon. What if you could invest in a portfolio with a high fixed rate of return that's not correlated or tied to the stock market or the Fed? It's a portfolio where you can turn your monthly income on or off. You can compound it whatever you like, and there's no loss of principal if you need your money back at any time. There are no fees. Your interest is compounded daily. You're paid monthly. As I say, a secure collateralized portfolio that delivers a high fixed interest rate, up to 10.25% fixed. Talk to my friends at YRefi. They're local. You can meet with them. I know them very well. Totally trustworthy and honest. They won't even give you a sales pitch. They leave that to me and Larry Elder. A due diligence approved firm. YRefi is, you can earn, as I say, up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's the word invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YRefi34. That's 888-YRefi34. Anyone read the Arizona Republic yesterday, Sunday? Am I the only one I know who reads the Arizona Republic? I think it's important to read it. I do read it. I do read it. I get it every day. Well, they had a major headline in their Sunday issue. A pandemic of grief was the story, and it was about what the aftershocks of the COVID shutdowns have meant for our youth. Not to be outdone, today's CBS News has COVID's education crisis, a lost generation. They talk to someone I used to kind of admire, an education expert in Manhattan named Jeff Canada. He did some good work in building some charter schools there in Harlem. But he says, he's quoted in this CBS article with Tracy Smith, he says that when it comes to how the pandemic affected education, the news was surprising and definitely not in a good way. Quote, we've got the data now and things are bad. They're actually worse than most of us thought. In fact, I would tell you that we have an education crisis right now. Who's? Yes, most of us maybe, but not all of us. Not all of us. Why are we still paying people like Cecily Myers Cruz, the head of the L.A. Teachers Union, United Teachers of Los Angeles, probably the biggest union in the country, who said not last year, but 2 years ago, there's no such thing as learning loss when she was asked about the effect of school closures. She says, our children didn't lose anything. It's okay that our babies may not have learned all their timetables. They learned resilience. They learned survival. They learned critical thinking skills. They know the difference between a riot and a protest. They know the words insurrection and coup. They may know the words insurrection and coup. They don't know the difference between a riot and a protest. I can guarantee you that. Most people still don't know. But this notion that they learned resilience and they learned survival is horse. You know what? It's horse manure. They did not. They did not learn resilience. They did not learn survival. They did not learn critical thinking skills. When she says our kids didn't lose anything, they lost a lot. When she says it's okay that our babies may not have learned all their timetables, well, maybe that sentence itself is the problem. 5 to 18-year-olds are not babies, and we shouldn't infantilize them. Not only should we not infantilize them, we shouldn't ruin their childhood and expose them to adult themes before the time is right. They've got it all wrong. They're infantilizing them when they shouldn't. And they're adulting them when they shouldn't. They are ripping them out and from the childhood garden of Eden. And so Jeff Canada and others can say, most of us didn't take this seriously enough. Well, a lot of us did. Jennifer Say got fired as the president of branding at Levi's for saying it. I got censored for saying it. Hallman did. Others did. But you have to understand what we're doing beyond the mental health issue, which I've spent probably more time than you want to hear. Again, me reiterating and revivifying right now. You have to understand what we did with education, just qua education. Forget the psychosocial issues for a moment. Psychological and social issues for a moment. Do you realize this country spends about $800 billion a year in elementary and secondary education? $800 billion a year, every year. And for that, we see our scores being mostly flat, flat, flat on the things that matter, the things that we measure, with incremental increases here and there, incremental increases. We erased all of those increments by two decades with the closing of schools for 18 months. What it takes years building can be destroyed overnight, and we did it. And it wasn't brain surgery, and it didn't require a telescope, and it didn't require a microscope. When we said going to school is important, we meant going to school was important. When we said socialization is important, we meant socialization is important. When we said studying and learning math and science and reading and history was important, we meant it. It wasn't a game. It was for these people. It was a game for these people. They wanted to roll the dice with your children. They wanted to roll the dice with your children, your money, and their psyches. Do you know what the economic cost of that 18-month closure was going to be? Eric Hanischek, professor up at Stanford University, he's probably one of the best education econometric professors and scholars in the world, if not the country. He analyzed that this is possibly going to cost as much as $33 trillion through the rest of the century. $33 trillion, what we did to the children and what their earnings average and gaps will be as a result of their education declines from this. That's our national debt, folks. That's our national debt. Rather than put ourselves on the course to addressing it within the next 60 years, we've put ourselves on the course of doubling it. Doubling it. And that is to say nothing of the psychosocial fallouts either. We'll talk to Brandon Weikert in the next hour, but if we can get to this topic, he has a great riff on the way we take this stuff seriously and the way our competitors take it seriously. I'll just give you the long and the short of it. They do and we don't. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. But this is country music and we do, right? Brad Paisley. Has Brad done something in a while? I haven't seen his stuff in a while. I haven't tuned into country in a while either. Brad Paisley's great. He's done some great stuff. That letter to me, that's something that should be reprised in commencement addresses. Or maybe before kids graduate from high school and college. If I could write a letter to me, you know the song? It doesn't really work well on radio because it's a little laborious. But it's advice to young people about what to take seriously and what not to. You know, a lot of young adults and adolescents put way too much pressure on themselves over the wrong things. And you don't really realize it till you get to be about Bill's age, Bill, my producer's age, which is about the age of Methuselah at this point. No, he's younger than me. I don't know how many of you go to the Brownstone website, brownstone.org, the Brownstone Institute. I was just reading as much as I could about this Wall Street Journal poll on patriotism and faith and family that came out today. This author there got it just the way I saw it. He says, when you are locked in your home, your business is closed, your church is shut, your neighbors are screaming at you to mask up, then the doctors come at you with shots you don't want, you are further prevented from leaving the country to anywhere but Mexico, and the president calls the unvaccinated enemies of the people. Sure, one can imagine that affections for the homeland decline. Now add the fact that you're broadcasting how unhealthy and sick you are to your fellow Americans, and now claim that you're a sick country and see where that takes you. See where that takes you. But this author, Brownstone, makes a good point. There is another important pillar of patriotism, and it's about trust in the civic institutions of the country, the schools, the courts, politics, all the institutions of government at all levels. And trust in these are at rock bottom, too. Courts didn't protect us. The schools shut, particularly the public ones, which are supposed to be the crowning achievement of progressive ideology, and the medical profession turned on us. That's a hard thing to dig out of, and it's hard to blame the American people for feeling down and looking at their shoes the way they are when we've put them through that. Again, what you've spent years building can be ruined overnight. Let's never do that again. Please never, 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 never do it. When you lose something, don't lose the lesson. I hope we learned the lesson on this one. Brandon Weicker coming right up.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.